What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at BollAndBranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to another edition of Phillies Today. Kyle Forsini here with you guys once again. And this one might be a tough one to get through, a tough one to listen to if you don't want to have painful memories be brought back up of the 2007 to 2011 postseason run. I'll touch on that in a little bit as to why we're diving into that and the heartbreak that followed for a lot of that. A lot of those playoff runs, winning that one World Series in 2008 with arguably the worst team to win a World Series there in that stretch. It felt like the Phillies continuously got better and better and better, kind of similar to what they're doing right now, but they didn't end up winning another World Series. They did it early. They got it in 08. They got back in 09, but they were never able to capture that second World Series for that core group of guys. And I'll touch on that, like I said, in a little bit, but I mentioned that because the Baseball Hall of Fame election is tonight. You can watch it on MLB Network. I believe it's at 6 p.m. tonight. But there are multiple Phillies that are on the ballot for the Hall of Fame, former Phillies, I should say, for the Hall of Fame this season. And with 45.9% of ballots known, right? So it's not like you know everything that's going on. So whatever these guys' percentages are of the vote that I'm going to read to you right now is not final. There's still a lot to be processed. There's still a lot for us to find out. But as of right now, again, 45.9% of the ballots that are known, this is where these current Phillies stand in relation to can they get into the Hall of Fame. Billy Wagner is at 84.4%, looking like Billy Wagner is going to get in. Now, again, you need 75% of the ballots in order to get elected to the Hall of Fame. So Billy Wagner with 84.4 with only 46% reporting right now. You would think he's going to get in. Billy Wagner was very close last year, too. He's been close for a couple of years now, I believe. So he is, I don't want to say a shoo-in, but you would think Billy Wagner's going to find his way in. And it kind of stinks in terms of the relation to former Phillies. Billy Wagner was here for such a short period of time and directly followed that by going to the Mets. You know, so it's not like Billy Wagner is some beloved Philly that we look back on fondly and we really want to get into the Hall of Fame. I mean, sure, it would be cool. He was a former Philly at one point, but I don't really think that in the grand scheme of things, you don't think of Billy Wagner as a career Philly. You don't think of Billy Wagner as somebody that it was a Philly when you think of his career, right? So he's got the most percentage of the votes of these guys that I'm going to mention. It looks like he's going to get in. Bobby Abreu has 25% of the 45 reporting right now. So not looking good for Bobby Abreu. I would be shocked if that changed drastically enough to get him to 75% and get him in. Looks like he's going to have to wait another year. Jimmy Rollins is at 21.7% of the vote. So Jimmy J-Roll, again, look, I of the three, you know, the big three, Ryan Howard, Chase Utley, Jimmy Rollins, I really thought Jimmy was going to be the one that was going to get in. I thought he was the one that had the best case. Was one of my favorites growing up. When I was growing up, I played shortstop too. So, I mean, I kind of always favored J-Roll a little bit, but he's only at 21.7% of the 75% that's needed to get in. Again, it would be a shock if something really drastic happened that would get Jimmy into the Hall of Fame, at least this year. He's going to have to wait another year. We'll see how many after that. But I don't think J-Roll's getting in this year. He's going to have to wait. The one that's a very interesting case, I just mentioned him. Again, 75% is needed in order to get into the Hall of Fame. Chase Utley currently sits at 52.2% of the ballots. That's an interesting one. That could jump up to 75%. I've seen a lot of discourse online, a lot of writers who have shown their ballots on social media, guys who have shown who they voted for, and a lot of them make the case for Chase Utley. And the one thing that I think a lot of us remember of Chase Utley was the injuries at the end of his career. We certainly remember how good he was when he was in his prime, but the issue with Utley was always the fact that his prime wasn't that long, right? I think the rule of thumb that a lot of people go by is if you dominated at your position for a 10-year stretch, you know, that's going to guarantee you to get into the Hall of Fame, or at least, you know, maybe not guarantee you, but it's going to at least get you a leg up on some other guys and get you in a good position to potentially make it into the Hall of Fame. So Chase Utley had a shorter prime, right? He was very, very good when he was in it. He was dominant, I'd say. I mean, for a lot of that stretch when the Phillies were going to the postseason in those years, and even a little bit before that, Chase Utley was a very good player for the Phillies. One of the best second basemen, if not the best second baseman in all of baseball. Now, this was also at a time where there were a couple of good other second basemen in baseball then too, but Utley was great. And it stinks that his career, you know, kind of came to a halt with the knee injuries and whatnot, and he wasn't able to sustain the greatness for a couple of extra years. But even with that, he is still at 52.2% of the vote. Again, that's with 45.9% reporting as of this moment right now. So a lot can change in the coming hours before the Hall of Fame election happens at 6 p.m. tonight. So keep your eye out for that. Look, I would still say that I would be surprised if he got up to 75%. I still think that. I think it would be a big turn of events if he could get, you know, 23% from the ballots remaining. But it could happen. It's the most realistic opportunity for one to happen as it relates to him, Bobby Abreu, or Jimmy Rollins. So keep your eye out for that. Again, 6 p.m. tonight. You can watch it on MLB Network. That's when it's going to be online for the Hall of Fame election. So be tuned in for that. If you weren't aware, I'm hoping I'm making you aware of that now, that we could hopefully see one of our guys that we really loved and that we cherished the time that he played as a Philly. We could see him get enshrined into the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. It would be a really cool moment. So again, make sure you're ready for that. Hopefully Chase Utley can get that 23% of the vote that he needs to get in. But on the cusp of that, and I know that it stinks, right? You're talking about the exciting news of Utley potentially making it into the Hall of Fame and all of that. Yeah, my brain immediately goes to the most painful losses that the Phillies had in that 2007 to 2011 playoff run, right? So when the Phillies were going, and I'll give you a little backstory as to why I want to talk about this. And I had watched a lot of film on this leading up to the Phillies postseason run this year against the Mets, where obviously it was cut short, unfortunately. But leading up to those playoffs, I was for weeks in advance for a while, I was watching old highlights, old full games of those 2007 to 2011 playoff runs. I was watching the heartbreaking losses. I was watching the thrilling wins, the whole deal. So I got a really good sense. Now, for full disclosure, I'm 25 years old. So I was young when those playoff runs were happening. I was young when these guys were in their prime. I'm not somebody, you know, that saw the entire career of Chase Utley and remembers it. I remember the good parts of it for sure. I've gone back and researched and looked and seen all the different things that Chase Utley did as a Philly. But I wasn't fully watching it all and soaking it all in and really understanding everything that was going on when those guys were in the playoffs. Again, 25 years old, so it's a little bit different for me. So that's why I was going back and watching a lot of it. I was watching it and I was trying to imagine what I would have been feeling in those moments at the age that I am now. I didn't fully understand everything when I was 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. I certainly understood what was happening, but would that feeling have been the same as it is to me now? Would it have meant as much to me then as it would to me now if they were to have won a World Series, right? So I'm going back, I'm watching a lot of highlights, a lot of film on those particular games, and I found that, man, there were some devastating losses during that postseason run that if they happened now, I would not be able to sleep for weeks after that, it feels like. I would be so hung up on it. I would be thinking about that game forever. I wouldn't be able to get it out of my system until they played again and hopefully won. I mean, it's kind of like those Diamondbacks games that happen in Arizona. Feels like those happen a couple of times to the Phillies in that playoff run. So I'm going to highlight some of the worst losses. Again, I get it. It's going to be a tough listen. The good news is this is over 15 years ago, right? So we don't have to... It's not like, you know, it's not like it's happening now, but it might reopen some wounds that you didn't remember that you had. So without further ado, we'll get into some of those worst losses of that playoff run. Cover your ears if you're a little afraid to listen. I promise it'll be okay, but cover your ears if you're skittish of these. Coming up at the first game I want to highlight here. So this is the 2010 NLCS, Phillies versus the Giants. And in game one, it's two former Cy Young Award winners going head-to-head against each other. It's Roy Halladay for the Phillies, who won the Cy Young for the Phillies, obviously, in 2010. He also won the Cy Young Award for the Blue Jays when he was with them, facing off against Tim Lincecum, who was also a Cy Young Award winner for the Giants. It's two heavyweights going head-to-head. It's the Phillies, who have been in two straight World Series, versus the Giants, who have seemed like they've kind of come out of nowhere, and this team is really good. And if you remember, this was the Cody Ross series, unfortunately. The Giants jumped out to a 1-0 lead in the top of the third inning on a Cody Ross solo home run. It was Halladay's first hit allowed in the postseason, if you remember, because he had one start prior to this. It was game one against the Reds where he threw the no-hitter. So obviously, the first hit allowed. He did not allow a hit through the first two innings of this game as well. So he puts the Giants up 1-0 in the third inning. But right after that, the Phillies tie up the game in the bottom half of the inning with a home run from Carlos Ruiz. So right away, you know, you kind of have that knot in your stomach going, Cody Ross hits the home run, saying, oh dear, what's going on here? Not used to the Phillies trailing at home in the postseason. Roy Halladay had been unhittable. All of a sudden, he gives up a hit. Is this going to let the floodgates open? What's going to happen? No. Roy Halladay gets out of it, only giving up the one run. Carlos Ruiz comes right back and makes the game 1-1 right in the bottom half of the third inning. Now, that game would remain tied until the top of the fifth inning when, get this, Cody Ross belts his second home run of the game with a solo shot, giving San Francisco a 2-1 lead. The Giants would then extend that lead to 4-1 in the following inning. So Ross hits the home run in the fifth. They would then make it 4-1 in the sixth inning when there were three two-out hits. A single by Buster Posey, a double by former Philly Pat Burrell, obviously, and then a single from Juan Uribe. That made the game 4-1. Giants. Now, Roy Halladay still pitching at that point in time. Unfortunate that he's given up these runs. You know, he was pitching a gem for the most part, but obviously then they get to him a little bit. It was 1-1 going into the fifth inning, and then becomes 4-1 at the end of the sixth. Really goes to show you how much different of a time this was in baseball, by the way, that Roy Halladay would give up four runs in six innings, and Charlie Manuel would still have him go out there and pitch the seventh inning, where he did throw a scoreless seventh inning. But that's not happening in today's day and age in baseball. A much different game, even though this is only 15 years ago, 14 years ago, really. It hasn't, you know, so it's crazy how much baseball has changed. Now, they go down 4-1 in the bottom half of the sixth inning, but the Phillies do close the deficit right away again. Jason Worth hits a two-run home run to make the game 4-3, so the Phillies are within grasp. With three at-bats remaining after this, they are only down one run. Unfortunately, Lincecum also pitches a scoreless half of the seventh inning, which then gets turned over to the bullpen. Javier Lopez retires the Phillies in the eighth inning, and then Brian Wilson. If you remember Brian Wilson, I don't know how you could forget him. He had the dyed black beard. He looked kind of menacing on the mound. He was really, really good during the 2010 Giants postseason run. He records a four-out save, striking out Shane Victorino to end the game. And the Phillies, with the home field advantage, obviously, in this series, you know, they've got the first two at home. They drop game one of the National League Championship Series on their quest to get back to a third consecutive World Series. They lose that game 4-3. And that is a stinger. It's a stinger to lose a close game like that. It's a stinger when it happens at home, but it's even worse when your ace is on the hill. It's even worse when Roy Halladay, who had been dynamite for you all season long, who was literally unhittable in the postseason prior to this game, unfortunately takes the loss, and the Phillies go down 1-0 in the 2010 National League Championship Series. So some heartbreak in that one for sure. Now, after that game, we're going to stick with the 2010 NLCS. After that game, the Phillies win game 2-6-1. So they head back to San Francisco, tied at one apiece. They lose 3-0 in game 3 of that series. Matt Cain tosses a gem. Cole Hamels gets tagged for 3 runs. Phillies only had 3 hits in the game. The Giants only had 4, but they end up winning that game, going up 2-1 in the series, where another heartbreaking loss takes place for the Phils. It's game 4 of the NLCS in 2010. It's October 20th. The game starts at 4:30 p.m. It was a matchup of the fourth starters. It was 21-year-old Madison Bumgarner. Get that, Madison Bumgarner, who was great for the Giants for a long time. This is when he was a young pitcher in baseball. He starts game 4 for the Giants. It's game 4 starter Joe Blanton for the Phillies. And I find this to be a little bit interesting, too, because this is 4 days after game 1 of the series. This would have been the fourth day of rest for Roy Halladay. You could pitch him on short rest, or you could trust in your fourth starter to go out there and do a job for you. Might be a little bit different nowadays with the way they handle pitchers and the way pitchers want to go out and they want to just, you know, they want the ball at all times. I would think Rob Thompson might lean on Zach Wheeler a little bit, or at least have him ready in the bullpen. I mean, you don't want to go down 3-1 in this series. So you're trusting in your four starter Joe Blanton, which seems crazy to do in this day and age in baseball, but maybe they would. Maybe they would have him start. So again, Bumgarner versus Joe Blanton. The Giants would score first when Buster Posey had an RBI single in his center that scored Freddie Sanchez. Now, that was in the first inning of the game. The Giants had a lot of first inning success in this series, highlighted once again here in game 4. Posey would once again put the Giants on the board with a 2-out double over left fielder Ben Francisco there, increasing the Giants' lead to 2-0. The Phillies' offense finally strikes back, though, in the fifth inning against Bumgarner. They did not have a run so far in this game until the fifth inning. They were down 2-0 going into it. They did not have a lot of hits. They only had they had 9 hits in this game, but did not have a whole lot of hits going into this inning. And if you remember, like I said, they only had 3 hits in game 3. So at this point in time, you're feeling like the Phillies' offense has gone cold. It feels like it's a similar story that we've seen even a decade or so later with the Phillies, where the offense going cold in the postseason, but they break through in the fifth. They get back-to-back singles from Ben Francisco and Carlos Ruiz, and then Joe Blanton hits a sacrifice bunt to advance the runners into scoring position. Shane Victorino would then hit a single up the middle, which scored Ben Francisco. However, Carlos Ruiz was thrown out at home plate by former Philly center fielder Aaron Rowan. I did not remember Aaron Rowan was part of this Giants team. I knew that Pat Burrell was. I didn't remember that Aaron Rowan was. Chase Elliott would then single to right field, and then Placido Polanco doubled in him as well as Victorino, which then gave the Phillies a 3-2 lead. Jason Worth was hit by a pitch, and Ryan Howard was walked, and then a wild pitch would bring home Chase Utley to make the game 4-2 at the end of the fifth inning. So the things got a little bit wild there for the Giants in the fifth. The Phillies take a 4-2 lead. All of a sudden, you might have a little bit of confidence, feeling like the Phillies have an opportunity to tie this series at 2, as long as Blanton and the rest of the bullpen can get the job done and hold the Giants at bay. Not to be done. The Giants would immediately get a run back in the bottom half of the fifth inning when Aubrey Huff hits a single, and that scored Andres Torres. Now, in the sixth inning, Pat Burrell has a leadoff walk and advances to third on a Cody Ross double. Stop me if you've heard that before. He was the MVP of this series, clearly for good reason. Pablo Sandoval comes to the plate and doubles down the right field line, but it was called foul. I remember watching this on a highlight. He ropes one down the right field line, and it's called foul. Very, very close. However, 4 pitches later, he does end up hitting a double, and it scores both Burrell and Ross, and the Giants regain a 5-4 lead. I mean, having a ball be that close to being fair and having it be ruled foul and then doing it 4 pitches later and knocking in both guys just feels devastating. I mean, you feel like you kind of catch a break by him not hitting it fair. Maybe you can get out of the inning. Not to be done. Phillies now down 5-4 at the end of the sixth inning. They would remain down 5-4 until the eighth inning. Now in the eighth inning, the Phillies come up to bat again, down 5-4. They get back-to-back doubles by Ryan Howard and Jason Worth. That would tie the game. Reliever Sergio Romo would then come in, and he retires the next 3 Phillies batters, which strands Jason Worth at second. They had back-to-back doubles to lead off that inning. Man on second, nobody out with Worth after tying the game. Can't get it done, though. The game remains tied 5-5. So it's 5-5 going into the bottom of the ninth inning. Phillies don't score in the top of the ninth. Roy Oswalt gets brought in to pitch the ninth inning for the Phils. Now, this is when Brad Lidge was not at his best. Brad Lidge had that incredible 2008 season, was not the same in 2009 or 2010. They bring in Roy Oswalt to pitch the ninth inning. There's a line out to right field to start the inning, but Aubrey Huff singles past the diving Ryan Howard. Buster Posey would then hit a base hit to right. It's his fourth hit of the game. That puts runners on first and third with only one out. Juan Uribe, who's pinch hitting in the pitcher spot, hits a sacrifice fly to left field, which allows Aubrey Huff to tag up and score the game-winning run, which gives the Giants a 3-1 series lead over the Phillies, and they ultimately would lose that series 4-2. They did win game 5, 4-2, but they would come back to Philadelphia and lose another heartbreaker, 3-2 in game 6, which would put the Giants on the verge of the World Series, and then would also be the first of 3 they would win in 5 years. But that 2010 playoff run had a couple of heartbreakers in it that I really wanted to highlight here in this episode. Now, for the last one that I want to highlight here for you guys, because I don't want to put everybody in too bad of a mood. The Eagles are still going to the NFC Championship game, right? And baseball still is coming up. I don't want to belabor too many awful losses for the Phillies here, but there is one more that's in 2009, the 2009 World Series, that is, that I would have just been a basket case. I would have been distraught if I was not 9 years old at this time. It would have been a heck of a lot different if it happened now, the way that this game goes. Obviously, the Phillies win the World Series in 08. They get back in 09. They're playing the Yankees. It's the, you know, I don't want to say crosstown rival because you're not in the same town, but it's you know, the Northeast rivalry. They're not in the same conference or league, obviously, but I hate the Yankees. I'm sure a lot of you out there listening that are Phillies fans hate the Yankees. If they lose to the Yankees in the World Series this time around, I would be very, very upset. But in 2009, Game 4 of the World Series. Now, going into this, the Yankees have a 2-1 lead heading into Game 4. The Phillies won Game 1 off the bat of Chase Sutley and really good pitching by Cliff Lee. They win Game 1 6-1. In Game 2, the Phillies again jumped out to a 1-0 lead, but only mustered 6 hits in the entire game, and the Yankees got one run in each of the 4th, 6th, and 7th innings to win that game 3-1. Going back to Philadelphia with the series tied 1-1, the Yankees would win Game 3 8-5. A game that was a barn burner, really. I mean, the Phillies get 3 runs in the second inning off of a Jason Worth 3-run home run. Not a whole lot much else after that. Only 2 runs for the remainder of the game. You would think with the CBP crowd going nuts in that game that it would get everyone excited and the offense would be able to perk up and do something, which unfortunately was not the case. They lose that game too. So now we go to Game 4, 2-1. The starting pitchers of this game are CC Sabathia for the Yankees versus Joe Blanton for the Phillies. So once again, Charlie Manuel putting his faith and his trust in Joe Blanton in a series where you're down 2-1. Would it work out for him? We're going to find out. So it's Game 4. The Yankees go up 2-0 right away off of Blanton in the top half of the first inning. But the Phillies would answer right back with back-to-back doubles from Shane Victorino and Chase Sutley in the bottom of the inning. The Phillies would then tie the game in the bottom of the fourth on a Ryan Howard single. He then stole second and scored on a single by Pedro Feliz. Now, if you remember this, and I remember it, I remember watching this and not... I semi-remember this happening when I was young, and then it was confirmed when I watched it happening later. On the single by Feliz, Ryan Howard does not touch home plate. Ryan Howard slides, he gets very close, his hand almost touches it, his foot almost touches it, but he does not touch home plate. Now, he's ruled safe by the umpire. Of course, in 2009, there was no replay assist, so whatever the umpire rules, unless they're going to confer with all the other umpires in the field, but when there's a call at home plate, you're not overturning it, and he is ruled safe. And again, didn't matter. You know, there wasn't replay assist back then, so he's called safe, he's then going to be safe. So it's 2-2. After that, now in the fifth inning, Nick Swisher leads off with a walk. Lead off walks always come back to kill you, right? He then scores on a single by Derek Jeter, and Melky Cabrera scored on a single by Johnny Damon. So in the fifth inning, that puts the Yankees back in front 4-2. Now, this is where it's going to start getting heartbreaking, right? 4-2 here for the Yankees. They get multiple runs there in the fifth inning. Joe Blanton comes out of the game in the seventh inning, and he holds and Chan Ho Park holds the Yankees scoreless. Now Chase Elliott comes to the plate in the seventh inning, and he hits his third home run of the series with 2 outs. Now that cuts the lead to 4-3. Right, Ollie's been the catalyst for the Phillies offense the entire series, makes it 4-3. Going into the eighth inning, this is where it's crazy. Pedro Feliz, with two outs in the eighth inning, hits a game-tying home run to make it 4-4 going in to the bottom of the, the top of the ninth inning. The crowd is going nuts. Feliz with a massive hit. The Phillies are feeling themselves. It's feeling like this is going to be a come-from-behind victory. You're going to tie the series at 2-2 with one more game at home left. And then Brad Lidge happens. He's not had a good year in 2009. He comes in to try and keep the Yankees at bay to keep it 4-4 for the Phillies going into the bottom half. He gets the first two outs, but then gives up a single to Johnny Damon. Then with Mark Teixeira batting, Johnny Damon steals second base, and he advances to third because the base was uncovered. Stinks, but still, you only need one more out. It doesn't really matter what he's doing. He was going to score on a single anyway, even if he was at second base. He's on third base, but then unfortunately, Alex Rodriguez comes up and hits a double to left field, which scores Johnny Damon. Jorge Posada then singles, which scores Mark Teixeira, who had also singled on an infield single, I believe. He singles as well, and that also scores Alex Rodriguez. The Phillies are down 7-4 all of a sudden now going into the bottom half of the ninth inning. They do not score, and the Yankees win the game 7-4 over the Phillies. Just a heartbreaking way to lose game four. Phillies would come back and win game five, but even that was shaky with the bullpen. They win that 8-6, then would go back to New York, though, and lose that game 7-3. An unfortunate end to a very fun 2009 season, a heartbreaking end. Just some really brutal playoff losses for the Phillies in that stretch, that being the worst one of them, in my opinion. I highlight that because, like I mentioned, Chase Elley up for the Hall of Fame. He needs 23% more of the vote in order to get in tonight at 6 p.m. Make sure you're tuned in for that. Hopefully we can see one of our guys get into the Hall of Fame this year. Unfortunately, Jimmy Rollins probably not going to get in, but Elley has a legitimate shot, like I said. So make sure you're tuned into that tonight. Hopefully Elley can get in. And until then, I'll talk to you guys next week on another edition of Phillies Today. The season's coming up soon. Keep watching the Eagles. Keep rooting on the Eagles. But the Philly season is just around the corner.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built. It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Imagine uncovering the secrets that others missed. A hidden clue, a silent witness, a twist that changes everything. I'm Carter Roy, host of Murder True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Join me every Tuesday as we dive into a famous solved or unsolved murder case. Follow and listen to Murder True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.